97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to 97.5 The Fanatic. Rob Motti and Joe Stazak taking you till 11 p.m. Eagles win, Cowboys lose. It should be a good day for Philadelphia sports fans, no doubt. We'll take a look at some of the other results around the league in this final hour, Joe. But the Eagles are now tied for first place with the Cowboys. And they get ready to go on the road to Minnesota, then to Dallas, and then finally to Buffalo. It is a difficult stretch. It'll be even tougher when they come home. It's the Bears, and then a bye, then the Patriots, and then the Seahawks. We're going to know what this team really is pretty soon. I think five games into it right now, we see a lot of inconsistency. We saw the defense step up this week, the offense last week. I still haven't seen the team put together a full four quarters. Still haven't seen a three-phase domination, yep. Offense, defense, special teams.
That is correct.
I don't know that we're going to see that in the next 3 weeks because the schedule is that difficult. They're going to have to be at their best to win these games on the road, and we'll find out for sure what they are fairly soon enough. But at this point in a wide-open NFC, I'm not scared of anyone. I don't look at it and go, there's no Patriots or Chiefs. The NFC for me is, you look around, Seattle's a good team. The Rams have now lost two in a row. I thought the Rams would fall a little bit after losing the Super Bowl last year. Green Bay goes to Dallas with a big win after the Eagles beat them in Lambeau.
Yep.
So, in New Orleans, Couple nice wins without Drew Brees. They still don't have Drew Brees. To me, that was the team that I was most concerned with entering the season. I know Brees will probably be back in 4 or 5 weeks. I still look at it as the Seahawks, the Saints, and of course the Cowboys got to be dealt with in the NFC East. Is there anyone that stands out to you that you're afraid of?
Yes. I'm concerned. I am a little concerned about the Cowboys. I'm not afraid of the Cowboys. I'm concerned. Dak's 3-1 against Wentz, especially playing there. And, of course, the Patriots and Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle's a tough game.
Seattle's always a tough game.
Man, Russell Wilson, to me, he's underrated when we talk about elite
quarterbacks. He's probably the most underrated football player in the league. He is phenomenal.
And we talk about Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning before that. Now you'd look at Patrick Mahomes. We talked about Andrew Luck, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. All Russell Wilson does is, one, line up and play, and he's healthy week in and week
out.
He's
always healthy.
And he's a winner.
He makes plays, and he wins. Did you see the pass he made?
Yes.
Running to his left and hitting, who did he hit?
I forget who that was.
I think it was Lockett. He hit Tyler Lockett in that corner. It was just phenomenal.
In that game on Thursday night, he was 17 of 23, 268, four touchdowns, passer rating 151.8. And he's still a threat to run the ball, always.
Always.
8 for 32, always seems to make a smart heads-up play. Yeah, that's definitely a team I'd be concerned with for sure. Let's go to Charles and Bluebell. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Charles?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm a pumped-up Eagles fan, and I want to talk some Eagles-Vikings history for a second, but first of all, I'm going to get technical, guys. The Eagles are in first place.
Yes,
why are we in first place? Record versus common opponent, the Redskins and the Packers. We are 2-0. Dallas is 1-1. We are in first place.
Yeah, they'll list them in first place. They never do the tiebreakers until the final end of the season. But I hear you. Right now, they get that tiebreaker edge for sure.
This is true. But listen, Eagles-Vikings history you were talking about when you were a kid how you started cheering for Randall Cunningham. Eagles-Vikings history goes back in my blood. Joe, the game you were talking about where the Vikings came back from like 24 down.
23-0. Wow, that was December 2nd, 1985.
Yes, that was the game that sealed Marion Campbell's fate. It cost him his job.
Oh, yeah.
And the Eagles went with Fred Bruni the last game of the season because what happened is that year all the USFL talent came into the NFL. And Anthony Carter signed with the Vikings, and I'm like, who is this dude? making these spectacular catches.
Played for Michigan of the
Anthony Carter. Absolutely.
Played for Michigan, and I forget who he played for in the USFL.
Yeah, the Michigan Panthers, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. That's
right.
Absolutely right.
But it cost Marion Campbell his job. But I could go back further than that, Joe. Dick Vermeil's first team, me and my father watched this Vikings team coming to the vet, and Chuck Foreman ran for 200 yards. 202 yards, to be exact.
Wow. You know, wow. I'm reading about this game right now. So Wade Wilson, their backup quarterback, he started the game because Tommy Kramer was injured.
Okay.
And then he got yanked at halftime of that game because they were losing 23-0. So
right.
The Vikings put a rookie named Steve Bono in the game.
Really? Okay.
Remember Steve Bono?
Of course I do.
He
yes.
goes 1-for-10.
UCLA.
Yeah,
Steve Bono came from UCLA.
Yeah, he goes 1-for-10 in the third quarter. So with 11:33 left, they put Wade Wilson, who they benched, back in the football game. He throws 3 touchdown passes and wins the game. Imagine
Absolutely.
Being yanked and coming back in.
Yeah, there was a game played in 1988, the hardest hitting game I ever saw during the Buddy Ryan years. The Vikings came in. We won the game 10-9. I know we kicked off to the Vikings, and Herschel Walker returned it for a touchdown.
Yeah, I remember that one, yes.
And Chris Carter caught the alley-oop touchdown. That was the only scoring. It was 10-9 final, but that was the hardest hitting game I ever saw.
Well,
the
House of Pain game. Remember the House of Pain game
in Houston?
Yeah, but this Eagles-Vikings game, the Vikings had Joey Brown or Chris Dolman on defense.
I remember that, yeah.
And we had our defense. And it was a 10-9 game. It was a hard-hitting game. A lot of injuries.
No doubt. Charles, man, I appreciate going down memory lane with you.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Charles.
I remember the House of Pain game. Then, of course, the body bag game.
I was at the body bag game.
You were at that one, huh?
The body bag game.
So this was the first game since then where the Eagles had touchdowns, 2 touchdowns on defense, 1 by interception, 1 by fumble. A ton of different stats to look at. The Eagles intercepted Luke Falk twice in today's game. They've picked off opponents in 3 of the last 4, including a pair of multi-interception games. So Nate Gary's touchdown was the first one, as you guessed correctly when I asked you during a break. First pick 6 is Patrick Robinson against the Vikings in the NFC Championship. So the Eagles, when they jump out to a 7-0 lead, early on, Jordan Howard's touchdown was his 4th this season. All he does is find his way.
I thought it was his 5th because he caught one through the air.
Yeah, 4th on the ground.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
5th overall.
All he does is score touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's had 24 touchdowns his first 3 years.
First Eagles running back with 5 touchdowns in a 3-game span because he didn't have one in the first week.
Right.
First week. Yeah. First Eagles running back with 5 in a 3-game span since Shady McCoy in 2011.
Wow.
And he's also the first Eagle to rush for touchdowns in 3 straight games since another guy in 2011, Ryan Matthews.
How about that? Ryan Matthews was here in 2011?
Yeah, what is that?
I thought he was here in like 2014-15.
That looks incorrect. This is the Eagles sent this out. I don't think Ryan Matthews was here in 2011.
They
actually put the same date in for Shady and for Ryan Matthews.
Oh,
they
so
had to make an
mistake.
Error. Yeah,
yep.
there's no way because Ryan Matthews was here with Chip Kelly. He was here the DeMarco Murray year.
That's right.
Which may have been 15.
That's
right.
I think it was 15.
15?
Or 14.
It was,
I think it was 15.
When Chip took control, he brought in DeMarco, brought in Ryan. Ryan Matthews may have been here. Was he here 2 years or he got hurt, was still on a
Ryan
roster?
Ryan Matthews was also here in Carson's first year. Remember he fumbled against Detroit in like game 4, kind of cost him the game. Yeah, he was here.
That was Carson's rookie year. So he was here in 15, played 13 games. He was here in 16, played 13 games. He actually finished with 14 touchdowns in 2 seasons with the Eagles.
You know, you talk about history with the Vikings. Aside from the NFC title game 2 years ago, what game stands out to you most in the history of the Birds and Vikings? And I can't guarantee you it was a positive.
For me, it's that 23-0. I mean, I just remember that to me. And I called up some of the what I was saying about Wade Wilson. His quote in that afterwards saying, I had mixed emotions. Imagine being this honest. I had mixed emotions about going back in.
Wow.
And he goes, I wasn't really ready. I was angry inside. I was angry at the way I played and angry at being yanked. My emotions were so up and down.
Which game was this?
So this was the 23-0 game. Okay. Yeah. So to me, that's the one. You have a different one that stands out to you?
I do.
Which one?
It was Tuesday Night Football.
Oh, Joe Webb. Yes.
After that, the Sean Jackson, walk-off punt return.
Yeah.
They lost three straight after that.
That Joe Webb game cost them home field advantage. That made them finish with the 3 seed, and they had to play the Packers
right?
as a 6
the Packers
at home.
And went on to win.
Riley Cooper. Remember that?
Riley Cooper.
Vic throw to Riley Cooper on first down. He went deep. They're driving. Goes deep to Riley Cooper, and it got picked off.
It was underthrown, and
yeah.
I don't think they needed to go deep on that play.
No, and Cooper didn't really make an effort to break up the... Wow, that's Tuesday Night Football. That might be the only Tuesday Night Football game.
Yeah, I agree. It might be, at least in the Super Bowl era. I could be wrong.
Didn't they cancel the Monday? It was supposed to be Monday night.
Didn't they cancel it
on Sunday?
Well, maybe...
They thought that it was going to be such a bad storm that on Sunday, they decided the Monday game was going to be canceled.
So it wasn't supposed to be a Sunday game, it was supposed to be Monday night?
Unless it was supposed to be a Sunday night game.
Can't remember, to be honest with you.
I got to look that up.
Although, that was
weird. I covered that game.
I thought I remember that Monday, looking forward to the game. So it might have been a night game, and then I was disappointed that they moved it to Tuesday.
Maybe it was supposed to be a Monday night game.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That would make more sense.
Stunning, stunning loss. Joe Webb, 6 carries, 31 yards. He had a touchdown. Adrian Peterson, 118 yards.
Was there a strip sack in that game? That went for a touchdown, or it was just a big turnover?
I think it almost went for a touchdown. There was a strip set. You're right. Good memory. Very good memory.
Yeah.
I don't think it went for a score, but close. It probably set up a score.
Man, that was Michael Vick's comeback player of the year season.
Yes, it was.
He stepped in that year, and he was fun to watch.
It was great to watch.
I enjoyed watching the Eagles version of Michael Vick, who could beat you
with his arm.
That touchdown pass to Deshaun against the Redskins.
That was great. That night he accounted for 6 touchdowns.
And those scrambles against the Giants.
He could flick his wrist and the ball would go 55 yards. Just flick his wrist. Boom!
One of the strongest arms I've ever seen.
Incredible arm.
When he got here, I got to know him a little bit. One of the most remorseful people that have gone through any difficult situation that I've probably had an opportunity to talk to in sports, because he really understood the magnitude of what transpired in his life and came to terms with it, came to grips with it. I enjoyed covering him because even... When the first year when he wasn't playing, he was just Donovan's. He was just the Wildcat.
The Wildcat.
They put him in there as the Wildcat.
He was behind Kevin Cobb. He was third string.
Yeah, he threw the touchdown pass to Jeremy Maclin in Donovan's last playoff game.
That's right.
He came in for that.
Yeah.
But he didn't change who he was that year in 2009. Humbled, 2010 comeback player of the year. Then he ends up going back to the bench. Was really a team leader when the whole Riley Cooper thing happened. Right.
Yep.
And then Nick Foles comes in 2013.
And does the 27-2.
Yeah, and Vic loses his job and could have caused a stink about it, was the ultimate professional team leader. Really enjoyed covering Michael Vick. It's been a good locker room. I get to do Eagles, Phillies, and at times I was doing all four. I was doing the Sixers and covering the Flyers, too. This Eagles locker room, some of these guys over the years, David Akers, Jason Avant, who Jason's on the Fanatic here,
guys.
Just phenomenal human beings. Troy Vincent, we go back to Troy Vincent, who's now the league's executive vice president of football. He's number 2 in charge behind Roger Goodell, right?
Yeah.
He's got, and they've had a lot of good, high character people go through this locker room for the Eagles, and they still do.
And that's what they want to build, that kind of culture.
Sometimes it translates into W's, Joe. Sometimes it just translates into a group of good guys.
Yeah,
you know, but I think it does help. That's for sure. It does help, but it's not to say you can't have Sometimes, hey, look at the Patriots. They'll go out and try and bring in anyone, and they could win with them. They could win without them. Antonio Brown is no longer on the Patriots and hasn't been for a few weeks now. They're still finding ways to win. Looking around the league today, and 610-632-0975 is the number to get in. We finally got some open lines for the first time in the show today as we're talking about this Eagles win over the Jets, breaking it down. Looking around the league today, though, Joe, we talked a little bit about Minnesota and a really good comeback win for Kirk Cousins, rebounding from what was a miserable performance. Some other games, New Orleans against Tampa, they win that one at home with Teddy Bridgewater. Look at the game he had. Very efficient. 26 for 34, 314 yards, four touchdowns, a pick, a 131.2 passer rating. They also had two other complete passes in that game. Alvin Kamara and Hill each threw a pass and each completed one. Sean Payton's a pretty good offensive coach, and Teddy Bridgewater was a good quarterback before he got hurt in Minnesota. He might be the best backup quarterback in the league now that Nick Foles is a starter.
Except for the Rams game where he had to come in and spell Drew Brees and they ended up getting killed.
Yeah.
He's 3-0, including a win in Seattle, a win against Dallas, and a win against, I don't know if you call them a hot team, but they came, Tampa coming off a big win over the Rams. 3-0, that's not bad for a backup quarterback to keep the ship steady until Drew Brees gets back.
Absolutely. You look at that, and I was concerned about them when Drew Brees was their quarterback, and it looks like they're right there. They're 4-1. I feel like that's going to be the team in the end who is probably going to get the number one seed in the NFC. There's a lot of football left to be played for sure. Other games, the Seattle game we talked about on Thursday night where
tremendous
they beat the Rams 30-29. Carolina is now, is it 3-0 with Kyle Allen?
Yes.
Is Cam Newton in danger of...
He's done.
Kyle Allen steps in, and he was 17 of 30, so it wasn't a big passing game, 181 yards, touchdown, no picks. It was a game manager type of game.
Sure.
That's the term people like to use, right?
Yeah, right.
Christian McCaffrey ran for 176 on the ground in that one. Carolina's 3-2. Jacksonville, we talked about Gardner Minshew. 374 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. You were telling me four Hail Marys at the end of the game.
Four Hail Marys had a shot to tie the game. Four? I've never seen it before. Never seen it before.
From the 21st and 5 at the Carolina 24, no time. That was the final play. Okay. So it was deep right. Man.
And three of them happened with 2 seconds left.
There was an interception, but there was a penalty, illegal use of hands,
yep.
So they get another crack at it. And that was incomplete. That was a defensive offside.
Yes, they were offsides.
Wow. You always hear them say, hey, that's the last play in a game unless there's a defensive penalty.
There it
and
is.
It happened
twice.
It happened twice. How about that?
You mentioned something interesting earlier in the show, and it's something to think about. Gardner Minshew's been great for the Jags. I know they lost today, but he's been great. What happens when Nick Foles comes back? I mean, they gave him $50 million guaranteed. He's got to be the starter.
You gave him, and you go by the, you can't lose your job to injury for the most part.
Which I've never agreed with totally,
yeah.
But Nick Foles is the starter there. Right?
Yeah, he's got to be.
Got to be.
I mean, so you're looking at he's missed now 4 weeks,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep.
It's an 8 to 10 week injury. You're talking about five more games with a bye thrown in there. Unless Gardner Minshew runs the table between now and when Nick Foles comes back, he's got to be the starting quarterback.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely interesting. New England goes to Washington, struggled a little bit. It was only 9-7 at the half.
Yeah.
And then they did what the Patriots do. 33-7 win. Tom Brady, 28 of 42, 348 yards, three touchdowns, and a pick. Sony Michel, 91 yards. Their defense, though, has been incredible this year.
Incredible.
So today they only gave up 7 points. On the season, the Patriots, have
they give up under seven a game?
Right, they've given up 34 points total in five games.
Five games, 7 points a game,
and I believe two touchdowns by the defense.
The Jets,
right?
There was a special teams touchdown and a pick six.
So really, their defense has allowed 20 points. That is when your defense has given up 20 points in
4 points a game
in five games, and you have Tom Brady in that offense. Man, that's gonna come down to they host this year. They host Kansas City.
Yes,
week 14.
Yep.
That might determine home field advantage.
It will,
even though it didn't matter last year. They went to New England. They went to Kansas City and won in the AFC Championship.
No Super Bowl hangovers for the Patriots. They kind of buck the system. They're the exception. They gave up 3 points in the Super Bowl to a very high octane offense of the Rams. So they were
the boy wonder, Sean McVay.
They were a good. Yeah, he got embarrassed. They were a good defense last year. They are much better this year. Much better.
They
keep doing it. This is an unbelievable dynasty. You'll never see anything like it again.
You'll never see this in sports.
Absolutely.
No, you absolutely won't. Denver, who was on the verge of going 0-5, and I know a lot of people around here were rooting for Denver to lose because, if they go 0-5, they're going to sell. They're going to trade Von Miller. They're going to trade Chris Harris. They're going to trade Emmanuel Sanders. By the way, Emmanuel Sanders today, only one catch for 9 yards. Oof. I don't know how much he's got left to help this football team. Joe Flacco, 14-20, 182, 1-1. Philip Lindsay ran for 114. They beat the Chargers, who some people thought the Chargers were kind of like a fashionable pick by some to make it to the Super Bowl this year. Melvin Gordon's first game, right? 31 yards rushing. They're now fell to 2-3.
Incredible. They lost to Detroit at Detroit earlier this year. You know, they were a chic pick because of last year they made the playoffs. I know they got whacked by they beat the Ravens, then they got whacked by the Patriots. But I think people assume they're going to take the next step. Didn't really expect Melvin Gordon to miss the first four games, but they're not as good as advertised.
No.
You know, and Phil Rivers, people call him a Hall of Famer, whatever. He tends not to win as much as a Hall of Fame quarterback should win. He just doesn't.
The scariest thing in the NFL, you know what I'm talking about today? They hit on Mason Rudolph. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, man. So I'll show it to you during the during the break. Mason Rudolph took a crunching hit from in the Ravens game, which the Ravens beat the Steelers in overtime. He was knocked unconscious on the play.
No kidding.
Like, you see him get a hit from, he got hit from behind and from the front. So it was like sandwiched in there, banged his head hard, completely unconscious. Ended up getting up and being helped off. It was wobbly walking off.
He was done for the day?
Yeah, it looked, after that, it looked scary. And they were losing at the time. Hodges comes in. And they rally and take it to overtime before losing to the Ravens. Lamar Jackson with 70 on the ground rushing, 161 in the air, threw three picks today.
Three picks.
Yeah. So the Steelers are 1-4. It's weird when the Steelers aren't a good football team. You count on them being good.
Every year they're good.
It's going to come down to the AFC's. That division is going to come down to the Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, who are now playing on Monday Night Football. Now you got the Cleveland Browns twice already on Monday Night Football.
Right?
Wow.
I think the networks also thought that they were going to be better than they have been. Again, to me, they're too Hollywood. They haven't won anything yet.
Yeah.
They're too Hollywood.
Yeah, we agree on that. We talked about that earlier in the year when we did a show together about, show me something first.
Show me something before you go out and work on your brand.
Yeah, absolutely. 610-632-0975. We'll continue to look around the league, and we'll take your calls on Eagles-Jets. I know the Eagles win this game by 25 points. The sentiment early in the show from a lot of the callers was they kind of treated it like a loss, weren't happy with the offense, and then it started to pick up. A lot of callers came on and said, hey, a win is a win in the NFL. How do you feel about this W for the Eagles over the New York Jets? They're now in a first-place tie with the Dallas Cowboys at 3-2. 610-632-0975. He's Joe Stazak. I'm Rob Motti, 975 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, and welcome back. 97.5 The Fanatic, Rob Motti and Joe Stazak. We were just talking about this off the air, and of course, we're talking all Eagles and Eagles-Jets game, and they win 31-6, so we'll take your calls on that, 610-632-0975. But, Joe, you said you're going to probably do an article, and Joe writes for 97.5 The Fanatics website, do great work for them, and take your thoughts and expand them into a column so you can check out his stuff. The Phillies still don't have a decision on their manager, and I thought today would have been the ideal day if you, in fact, are going to keep Gabe Kapler. Leak that today.
Steal some headlines.
Right? Leak it a little bit because you know it's not going to be a popular decision. We've heard from the fan base. We know what the callers and the listeners and the perception of Gabe Kapler is. People want change. If you wanted to bury it, you do it on a day that the Eagles are playing and the Eagles get a big win.
Yep.
We're going on now 7 days. The Phillies haven't officially confirmed that Matt Klentak and Andy MacPhail are safe. And John Middleton is still undecided on his manager.
We know that, or is he undecided on the other front office guys?
I think the longer nothing's been official, it's been hinted at, not officially reported, but I believe hinted by some that the other guys are safe. But I would think the longer you go that you're going to evaluate everything. And I understand he's a thorough businessman who wants to make the best decision possible. But I talked about this yesterday. If you have a guy showing up to the office every day for work who doesn't know that he's guaranteed a job tomorrow, that relationship is not heading towards a good ending. It looks like it's going to head towards a messy divorce because you're trying to upgrade the situation. You're trying to find someone better for the job. And then ultimately, are you going to still go back to the same guy and say, hey, you know what? I'd like you to stick around for one more. Like, John Middleton needs to be convinced that Gabe Kapler's the right man for the job, then he's not the right man for the job in his eyes.
Well, let me ask you this. Didn't he hire baseball people to make these decisions? If he's going to get his, you know, hands in the cookie jar,
with Charlie Manuel.
Absolutely. Doesn't it usurp Matt Klintak's authority?
Yes.
And what is he doing here if the owner's going to make the decisions?
Yes. Yes and yes. And I got the overwhelming sentiment from fans yesterday and callers to the show when I put it out there to him. I said, what would you say to John Middleton if you had the opportunity? Because we know John Middleton pays attention to the fan base. That's why they went out and got Bryce Harper. They thought Manny Machado was a better baseball player,
yeah,
but couldn't sell the tickets that Bryce Harper could. And in fact, the Phillies this year, my colleague at the AP, Ronald Blum, who does a terrific job, put a story out yesterday of the attendance in Major League Baseball. The Phillies had the biggest increase in attendance this year of any other team, directly attributable to Bryce Harper. So it was a good business decision. But John Middleton alluded to listening to polls that he saw people conducting whether or not they should sign Bryce Harper. So I said to the fan, what would you say to John Middleton? And Joe, between the callers and the responses on Twitter that we were getting to that question on my show last night, Not any of it was positive towards John Middleton.
Of course not.
And he's gone from being a guy that people thought would be a George Steinbrenner-like, a welcome, open up the deep pockets to not as crazy as George, who was firing Billy Martin back and forth. People have kind of turned on John Middleton. And I said this yesterday.
I was talking to people around the league, and they asked me, what's happening in Philly? Like, they were snickering at this situation. So when you have a perception out there league-wide that you, even if you know what you're doing, but people are laughing at you saying, what the heck are you doing? That can't be good for business.
No, it's terrible for business. And the fact that picture Gabe is a sales manager and his players are his sales force. What does it tell you when the president or the owner of the company has to go to his salespeople to ask about the sales manager? You know, I don't get that.
Yeah.
To me, the whole thing, it is kind of embarrassing. And if people have turned on Middleton, it's because they don't like McPhail and Klintak.
Yes.
And those were his hires. And he extended them.
People are quick. And that's why I think, Joe, that Klintak and McPhail are safe, because he extended them and quietly. And it's bad business to have to pay two people who have three-year deals left. However, he's got it. Money's not the issue. It's still bad business. It's a big week, and it's a big decision.
What I think I heard you say yesterday, I said it on my show, billionaires and executives and CEOs don't like to look like they made mistakes.
Yes.
So, and I don't agree with that. I agree with that. That is the case, but you're just hurting yourself even further if you don't make corrections to the mistakes that you made. Now, maybe he doesn't think he made mistakes, but if he does fire Klintak and McPhail, it looks like he made mistakes,
yeah.
And he doesn't want to do that. But again, if it would help your team and you know you made a mistake, you just don't want to admit it, that's not good business either.
Those who do their job best are willing to admit when they made a mistake, and that's how you make progress. That's how you move forward. You can't sit there on these mistakes. It's going to be a interesting week to see how much longer this drags out. When are you going to come to this decision? Because you got a manager showing up to the office, putting his work in, and his job security still up in the air. I don't know. Honestly, Joe, I don't know where this is headed. I felt on both sides. I thought, okay, there's no way they're going to keep him. But I feel like the longer it lingers, the more they're looking for excuses and ways to justify not making a move and maintaining status quo, and they'll point to the injuries, and they'll point to all kinds of different situations and say he didn't have the talent. And I've been on record saying it's not Gabe Kapler's fault.
Oh,
this
I
team.
Agree.
They didn't have the talent.
Story about that.
It's not. They just don't have enough talent. But man, this fan base is demanding change.
Demanding change.
And I think more people, even the people who called me and probably who've called your shows, if given the choice, would say they want Klintak out over Gabe Kapler. But we both know if you hire a new GM, he's going to want to bring in his new manager.
His new guy, absolutely.
And what compounds this is that they're making decisions on some of the coaches. They're bringing back some of the coaches. They need a new hitting coach. They, no surprise, are letting Chris Young go as pitching coach. So now if you do make a change, you're going to bring in a manager who's got half his staff already in place. None of these high-profile guys, from Joe Maddon to Buck Showalter,
to
Joe Girardi, who I think Joe Girardi's ticketed for the New York Mets job. In fact, did you hear that game at all last night? He did the broadcast.
Yeah.
I don't know who was doing the play-by-play or the other guy in the booth, but they were asking him about Pete Alonso. And they said to him, like, so is he going to hit second for you next year? And Girardi said, hey, I'm here. And he played it cool.
Of course.
But if the guys in the booth with him are making a joke like that, I would be shocked if Joe Girardi's not heading to the New York Mets, because those guys don't want to be wrong and they may know something behind the scenes. But whoever it is, regardless, you bring in a guy, unless it's Dusty Wathan, the third base coach that you promote, and you tell him, here's half your staff, that doesn't go over well.
Well, why would you not let your manager pick his staff?
Exactly. He's got people he's comfortable with. If he's an established manager and not a first-time manager, a guy who's done this before, he's got guys that he's got a bench coach that he's comfortable with, that he's worked with before. So that get that when you're making the list, are they going to make a change? Are they not going to make a change? That would lead me to believe they're not going to make a change.
Well, let me ask you, if I don't know how this works, if they do not make a change, do they have to announce it? I mean, what are you announcing that your guy's already in place? You
know, they don't have to announce it, but I would think that this organization understands that what they do is they've always had Klintak and McPhail do an end of the year wrap up news conference.
They haven't done that yet.
They haven't done that, so clearly they're waiting on this first. So if they make no announcement and make those guys available, the very first question is going to be, is your manager coming back? I think they have to announce something because you can't be that oblivious to what's going on. It's the big question. Now, they could say, oh, well, he's under contract for a third year. We never were considering it. No, this has to be addressed. There has to be a vote of confidence if he's coming back. I would hope that this happens sooner rather than later.
What are they reviewing? What is he reviewing, actually? Like, what do you think he's reviewing?
That's what's baffling, because you had 2-3 weeks in September where you kind of
knew. You're not
going to the playoffs.
Right.
He goes on that road trip with them. They go 3-8 on that road trip, 2-9, whatever it was. You had enough time to come to a decision. 6-7 other teams were able to make a decision on managers
within
a day.
Right away.
Except the Mets with Mickey Callaway. They waited, a couple days?
Yeah.
Which actually surprised me. He won 86 games.
Yeah.
So that goes a little bit maybe beyond the results on the field. Maybe there was some kind of issues with the GM, who was a new GM for the Mets. I'd look at Mickey Callaway as a pitching coach. That's what he was and did what he was best at before he became a manager. But I would think they're going to leave that to the new manager or to Gabe Kapler. And we don't know. We don't know. 610-632-0975. I know it's Football Sunday. Eagles beat the Jets, but it's a big week, and I wanted to put that out there.
I'm sorry. I know we got to go to a break, but I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Let Chris Young go. Who made that call? Doesn't the manager usually fire his guys or not? Who made that call?
Now we've seen in two situations with John Middleton in basically saying, I want Charlie Manuel to be the hitting coach. That couldn't have been a Gabe Kapler, because Gabe Kapler was strong and loyal to Chris Young. So that was a front office move, which leads me to believe the front office is going to stay intact, and they may or may not.
It's
like I said, around the league, they're looking at this and kind of snickering, going, "What the heck's going on in Philly? They don't know Do they not know what they're doing?" It's a weird. It's a bad look. It's a bad look right now. 610-632-0975. We have one more segment to go. Joe Stazak, Rob Motti, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
.45, 97.5 The Fanatic. Rob Motti and Joe Stazak. We were watching that Mason Rudolph hit. Man, that was scary. Just seeing the reaction of all his teammates, and thankfully he's okay. But wow, that didn't draw a flag. How about that? I didn't even notice that.
Missed that one,
Joe. I didn't even notice that. That didn't draw a flag. That was in the early game, and Mason Rudolph was just knocked unconscious.
He was out before he hit the ground.
Right, his body went limp, but he got up, walked off the field, wobbly off the field, and man, it's some scary stuff in the NFL, and some hits today that you look around the league. Carson took a couple where they weren't anything close to that. But the one where his knee kind of like went backward, I was cringing at that one. The other one, at least they made it out of. The offense was inconsistent. The offense struggled. But at least they made it out of that game completely healthy, other than Darren Sproles and the quad injury, and we'll find out how long that could be. And you know what? We probably won't find out tomorrow. It might be one of those day-to-day. Doug will tell you this. If it's day-to-day, that means, okay, it's a little bit better. If he says week-to-week, then we know Darren Sproles might be out for a while, and that'll we'll have to take a look at the punt return situation. Corey Clement, who returned 6 last year, 1 this year. Today was the muffed. I don't put all the blame on him because I think he thought that the ball
it
hit.
Did. You could see how he reacted as soon as that ball. And it looked like on TV it hit Ryan Lewis's foot.
He was not going for the ball till
absolutely
till that point.
Right.
Let's get to Chris in Williamstown. You're on the Fanatic. What's up, Chris?
You know what, Rob, Joe? The fact that this whole managerial thing is going on in Philadelphia as long as it has, you know, Rob, we both know John Middleton made a decision to bring Bryce Harper in here on a Twitter post. You know, that says enough to the fact of the pulse that he has of the fans of this town to knowing when it, you know, enough is enough and enough complaining is enough that not something needs to be done. But in this case, he's allowed this whatever circus go on as long as it has between Klintak and Kapper with the analytic nonsense. But I think they're so enthralled in this that they can't get themselves out of it. They're just going to have to see this out to the end. And you hear when you hear Joe Girardi being tied to other teams, like that worries me. That makes me think that we have no shot in heck of landing any legit manager, and that's why they are sitting on this fool as long as they are, a fool being Gabe Kapler. So
I think you're a little harsh, Chris. I wouldn't put Gabe Kapler in the fool category. Joe and I both are in agreement. They didn't not make the playoffs this year because of Gabe Kapler. They just weren't a good enough team that lacked talent.
I don't think any manager on this earth could take this team to the playoffs. With what happened.
Not this year. Chris.
I grant you that. No, I'm a little harsh, but you know what? I expected more out of a team that had, you know.
I did too.
But
what they didn't do, Chris, was upgrade the starting rotation, and that falls on the general manager. You wanted to talk Eagles, though. I want to let you get your points in on the Eagles.
From the onset, this is something I think we'll we need to probe. Now, today is a substantial situation. Man, every time he defers, something just ticks me the wrong way about that. But anyway, you know, to see the way the defense was able to get in and get 10 sacks, 3 picks, I mean, this was something that was not, you know, non-existent to a degree for a majority of last season. They couldn't get a pick to save their lives. And to get 3 today, it's the third-string quarterback, all right. Yeah, you know, Le'Veon Bell wasn't able to get any holes and get anything going.
No, he had 2 picks and a strip.
Yeah, 2 picks and a strip. But, no, you're right, Chris. This was lacking, and I know it was the Jets. I know it was a third-string quarterback. I know it was an inept offensive line. But you get 10 sacks, and you get those turnovers and the 2 touchdowns. You wanted to see that. They did it. And that's got to be a positive. And you know what it does? It gives these guys confidence no matter what. No matter how bad the team they were facing, it gives these guys confidence they can get to the quarterback and actually finish, which they hadn't been doing.
See, you know what, though, Rob? There are 2 things, and I'll jumble them together. Aaron Rodgers took one hell of a hit between 2 players where he literally got crunched 2 different ways, you know, when you were talking about his a second ago. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, for some reason, I hope they find the chemistry that they or whatever the secret, you know, ingredient was when Frank Reich was here, where they were able to, when you have Lane Johnson today telling you, yo, we need to run the ball, like, dude, pound the ball. Something isn't right when you just fall to the well and you keep going to the same thing and not running the clock. You almost gave them a chance to come back into this game when they got the touchdown. You almost slipped there at the end. What is it about Doug Peterson that he can't find that card, that magic key to what Frank Reich brought and incorporate that into this offense?
Chris, great stuff. Good question. Joe's going to address that and I appreciate the call because Joe talked about this a couple weeks ago with Frank Reich. You brought it up after people hadn't been talking about Frank Reich and missing him for a while. What do you think it is, man?
I think Frank Reich was a better play designer. He was a better play designer, you know, in my opinion, and it was more creative. There were guys seemingly open all the time. And I just think he has it. He has his level of knowledge and level of an ability to incorporate that in game plans is just, it's higher than Doug's.
I think also maybe, Joe, do you think this having Frank Reich on the sideline in his ear at times maybe saying, sure, hey, you're getting away from the run too much.
I agree.
To where you don't have to have Lane Johnson emphatically tell you on the field, hey, let's run the ball. I want to try.
Was that on TV or did you notice that?
I just saw that sitting in the press box. Okay. I don't think the camera caught that, but he was emphatic. I'm trying to see the two plays right after that, what happened. So it goes left end, left tackle, left end. All right, so here it is. It's in the third quarter, and there's a passing complete deep to, and there's illegal contact on the Jets. So now you got a first and 10 at the Jets 41. Jordan Howard runs for 12 yards, and it was after that one. So Jordan Howard ran for 12 yards to get to the Jets 29, and that's when it happened. And then the next thing, they did, no, it was when he ran for 13 yards. So Jordan Howard ran for 13 to get to the Jets 13. So within a span of three plays, Jordan Howard had a 12-yard run and a 13-yard run. So Lane's feeling it. The offense is feeling it, and he's saying more, more, more. And then they do go two more plays after, but both of them go to the left side. Howard gets no gain. Then he gets a 3-yard gain. And then it's third and 7. Carson throws incomplete to Miles Sanders, and they settle for a field goal. So at that point, they had been running effectively. They continued, but they ran the other side, yeah, not the Lane side. And that's what happens. I want to get to a couple interesting tidbits here from Dylan McKinnon, who's been full of good facts and knowledge tonight. This is for all the Dak Prescott fans out there. Carson Wentz has thrown two picks this season in 174 attempts. Dak today threw three picks, surpassing Carson's total in one day in only 44. Cowboys lose to the Green Bay Packers. Rally from a 31-3 deficit at home, make it a game and lose 34-24. And the Eagles win. Oh, also, Collins injured in today's game. Maybe a sprained MCL. He's an important offensive lineman for the Cowboys.
Sure he is. Yeah, Lyle
thanks,
Collins.
Dylan. Yeah, that's a big one. Of course, it doesn't matter who they have next week. The Cowboys are playing the Jets, so they're going to bounce back from that one.
Their schedule, we talked about the schedule, the next six games for the Birds. Let me go over the Cowboys' next six games. They have the Jets, because it's easier than the Eagles face. They have the Jets, and of course they have the Eagles. They have the Giants, Vikings, which is, you know, the same as the Birds.
Where's the Vikings
game? It's at home.
At home.
It's in Dallas. Then they have the Lions, and then they have the Patriots. So it's a little easier.
Is the Lions, is that a Thanksgiving game?
The Lions game.
Nah, that's way too soon.
No, a Thanksgiving game would be Cowboys. No, because when's Thanksgiving?
Thursday the 26th.
Eighth, because I would think it's the 24th,
but it
has them as the Patriots being at home for that game, and Cowboys are always home.
Yeah,
so maybe it's the 28th, and
yeah, that's 4 days later. That's Thursday. Yeah, that'll be it.
That's right, and that's they play the Bills. Bills at Cowboys.
Bills at Cowboys on Thursday.
How about that? That's an interesting.
Yeah, that's a
matchup.
That's an interesting, definitely for sure. Right now, going to be an interesting NFC East race because the Eagles with the win, Cowboys with the loss. They are tied at 3-2. Eagles going to get ready to go on the road. We're going to learn a whole lot more about this football team coming up. Joe, this was fun. Let's do it again next week.
Always a blast, brother. Always a blast.
How about that? We'll do it again next week. Dylan McKinnon, fantastic job producing the show. Thank you to everyone called in, checked in on the Twitter. We will be back next week. I believe next Sunday you and I are doing 9 to midnight.
9 to midnight. I think there's a Flyers game.
There's a Flyers game. Yeah. So Eagles will play at 1. You and I will be on 9 to midnight. So for Joe Stazak, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.
Late.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.